Welcome to the Arnott Cato Health and Wellness Radio Series, a program sponsored by the Arnott Cato Foundation. The foundation is a 20-year-old charity dedicated to improving the health of the nation by enhancing the training of and celebrating the advancement of knowledge of all levels of healthcare personnel. It was founded by the late Sir Carlisle Burton and is now chaired by Sir Errol Warren. This series aims to inform, educate, and engage the public on various aspects of health matters, including medical issues, nutrition, mental health issues, and more. The Arnott Cato Foundation Health and Wellness Radio Series is moderated by Marianne Burnham and produced by Margaret Hope, both members of the board of the ACF. Join us every other Sunday to find out more.
In the upcoming program, we will explore the issue of childhood obesity. Our guest today is Professor Anne St. John, consultant pediatrician and medical director of youth health at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados. Welcome, Dr. St. John.
Thank you very much, Marianne, for having me as a guest on your program.
Thank you. So we're talking about childhood obesity, a passion of yours. Let's start from the beginning. What is childhood obesity?
Childhood obesity, as defined by the World Health Organization, is being one of the most serious global challenges in the 21st century. Currently, one in three children in the Caribbean is overweight or obese. And the same pertains for Barbados, which is just one of the territories. And it's estimated by 2030, half of the region's children are expected to be overweight or obese, with all the social and health implications.
Okay. Why is it such a major concern? You know, children are growing. They may, you know, you might be chubby and you're when you're younger and you're slimmer when you're older. Why is it such a major concern?
It is a concern because of the long-standing complications which may arise and development of what's called NCDs, non-communicable diseases. However, to really define what is obesity, one has to understand the definition. And again, World Health Organization sets out the definition as being a disorder in which excessive body fat has accumulated to such an extent as to adversely affect one's health. And the most wide definition used is body mass index, which is calculated by looking at your weight in kilograms divided by the height in meters squared. And there are what we call percentiles or standards for children of various ages to determine if they are overweight, which is when you have them below the 85th percentile, or obese, which is when the child's body mass index falls over the 95th percentile.
Okay. So the childhood overweight, childhood obesity is a problem. One in three children in Barbados are overweight, are obese. What? So we know that unhealthy children grow into unhealthy adults. So what conditions are we seeing in both the adults and the children that are of concern as a result of this obesity?
We're looking at general effects on organ systems of the body. The obesity is associated then with high blood pressure and heart disease and type 2 diabetes. And obesity in general affects most of the organ systems of the body. For example, it affects your brain function, developing a condition similar to if you have a brain tumor with increased pressure. And it seems like you have a brain tumor with all the symptoms, but it isn't actually a tumor when you've investigated. It also affects you psychologically, leading to poor self-esteem, depression, and eating disorders. It can affect your lungs, causing sleep apnea, asthma, exercise intolerance are observed. It affects the heart with you having high lipid levels, high blood pressure, coagulation disorders, chronic inflammatory disorders, and dysfunction of the lining of your blood vessels. Also, your gastrointestinal system, a higher occurrence of gallstones and fatty changes in the liver. The kidneys are also affected. Musculoskeletal system is also affected because you can get a condition where there's a slipping of the head of the big bone, which goes into your hip, called a femur. Blount's disease with excessive curvature of the knees, fractures, flat feet, and then, of course, the big one in Barbados, type 2 diabetes, associated also with precocious puberty in children, the polycystic ovarian syndrome, and dysfunction of the gonads in boys. Mm-hmm. A long list of complications related to overweight and obesity, I'm afraid.
Okay, because I know for sure that we've been hearing more about the PCOS, the polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yes.
In Barbados, it seems to be increasing. The type 2 diabetes is there. We're seeing them more and more in adults. But are you seeing the diabetes, the type 2, the manifestation of type 2 diabetes in children more often?
We are seeing, again, it's been noted. Formerly, we would have seen admission to the hospital, maybe 5 or 6 type 1 diabetics in a year. However, mm-hmm. we're seeing an increased occurrence now of the type 2 diabetes where you have an insulin resistance. This is not mm-hmm. a condition like type 1 where the pancreas does not produce insulin. This one is where you have insulin, but there's an insulin resistance. And so this is very worrisome indeed.
Mm-hmm. And that is directly related to obesity.
Obesity and overweight. Yes, associated closely.
Okay, so where is all of this obesity coming from? What has changed in our society? What are we doing? What are we doing less of or more of?
There are quite a few factors. It's multifactorial, and there are certain things which are quite clearly associated with this change in the situation in health. To start with, lower than recommended levels of exclusive breastfeeding. Formerly, people would have breastfed a child for several months, depending on, of course, their work situation and socioeconomic situation, but lower than recommended levels of exclusive breastfeeding. Undesirable feeding practices, where you are introducing inadequate beverages, substitute beverages, high sugar beverages, and you're also introducing prematurely solids before the age of 6 months. The standard, gold standard mm-hmm. is do not introduce solids before 6 months. Allow the child just to have milk. They will gain weight very well. Then there's the observation of the excessive intake of sugar-sweetened drinks, including sodas and things like, in Barbados, malt and I don't want to call names commercially, but Tetra Pak juices, which are mm-hmm. juice drinks because of such high sugar they can turn in the form of corn syrup solids. Then mm-hmm. we have high salt foods being consumed. The snacks are unhealthy snacks and calorie-dense, nutrition-poor foods. There's also emphasis on lacking the intake of fruit and vegetables in the average daily diet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so ours is nutrition related mainly. I know that the children are, you know, they do have devices. You know, they are playing games on the phones, on the tablets, on the computers. So a lower level of physical activity comes into play.
Certainly.
But the nutrition aspect likely has the biggest impact.
That certainly does. I did not mention, but the lack of the recommended daily activities. And generally speaking, healthy meals encompass 5 servings of fruit and vegetables per day, 4 servings of water, 3 servings of protein, including dairy, less than 2 hours of screen time, including the TV, tablet, and phone. And mm-hmm. that is where we're at, less than 2 hours of screen time. However, in the period of the year since mid-March, I can tell mm-hmm. you that over the globe, they've found that some students are sitting for 4 or 5 hours on mm-hmm. some kind of a screen. The last thing I'd mention is an hour per day of moderate physical activity. And that's almost gone through the window during the period of the COVID shutdown and lockdown. That almost went through the window. So you have them sitting and sleeping a lot more than they would normally do. And this is a negative factor where it comes to trying to control overweight and obesity.
Yes, I must say that in my nutrition clinic, I've seen children, who parents have brought them and they've put on weight throughout the COVID lockdown period. But now going forward, we have our blended learning, our modified school structure. Some schools are going to school 5 days a week. Others, you know, have restricted the days per week to 2 to 3 days in-person learning, and then the other days at home. And this, therefore, has increased the level of inactivity for children.
Risk factors, for sure. I mean, generally speaking, there are a number of influential factors which result, contribute to overweight and obesity. And the environment, changes in the environment where you are shut in and locked down and you can't go outside and you can't run around. Then they're biologic, genetic. There are many people that will try to rationalize and say, well, my family is big boned. And I would say bones weigh almost the same. The bones are the length for your particular height. You cannot really rationalize that your bones are bigger than other people's bones, corresponding for height. Genetic factors, change in lifestyles for sure, as we have seen, where people are sedentary, a lot more sedentary, and they tend to take the elevator rather than walk up the stairs, or they tend to drive almost to park next to the door of the supermarket instead of parking in the lot and coming, as you would see, walking the distance. And of course, there's the physical activity, which we touched upon earlier.
Right. About that biologic genetic connection, not everybody is going to be a size 1 or a size 4 or a size 6. So how do you manage that? You know, you're a pediatrician, you're seeing the children all different sizes. Some children are naturally bigger than others. How do we assess this whole obesity thing? If it is that, you know, the child's, you see that the child's parents are bigger, or you see that the child's parents are normal size, how does that influence the size of the child? How does that play a role?
There are two approaches, really. One is the preventative approach, and you will always remember hearing prevention is far better than cure. So we start during pregnancy, looking at weight gain. The obstetrician usually will take the pregnant mother's weight, and counseling goes on, and they have a specific number of visits. So looking at her weight gain during pregnancy, and by and large, about 25 pounds or 10, 11 kilos would be the average of weight gain. Once you see people gaining more than that, there's some reason which needs to be looked into. For example, if they're accumulating fluid during pregnancy, or if it is that they're consuming a lot more than they need. And I don't need to raise it with you. You must have heard eating for two. There are some people who really are convinced that they're eating for two
and that's a myth.
Consume a lot more. It's a myth, because the infant is a parasite. The infant pulls on the mother's nutrition. And so at the end of the pregnancy, certainly within 6 months, the mother should be able to be back to her pre-pregnancy weight. But that does not often happen. And I often hear parents telling me, oh, since I had the baby, that's why I gained weight. Well, that isn't really a reality. That is an explanation which has been passed on. So looking at weight gain during pregnancy, the next thing is, if the baby is larger than average, they stand a chance of being overweight or obese. So if
throughout their lifetime, throughout their childhood.
If you have two parents who are average weight, that there's a less than 7% chance of the child being overweight or obese. If you have one parent, it's a 40%. And if you have two parents who are obese or overweight, the child has an 80% chance. So you can see from day one when the child is born that it can be disadvantaged. And we have to look out for this as pediatrician or the family doctor or the clinic nurse when the children come for their immunizations at 2, 4, 6 months, a year, 18 months, and then annual as required, that they have weight and height and their body mass index is looked at and parents are advised. Now, in our green health booklet has growth curves that you can plot them and point out to them, this is a caution here, we're at the orange light or we're at the red light now. Something has to be, intervention has to be started. So just general health visits, you can detect these things, and counseling generally on activity, on diet, looking at what they're having, the interventions can have positive results.
Okay. So the diet is of major importance. I know that the Heart and Stroke Foundation and other entities in Barbados and around the world, the Caribbean and the world, are looking at sugar-sweetened beverages. It is the easiest way to take in your additional calories. You can more easily drink down your calories versus eat the calories, right?
That's true.
So I know that the diets, and we'll talk about these sugar-sweetened beverages, but I know that the diets of children from a nutrition standpoint, you know, the parents these days often offer a lot of ultra-processed foods. So they start their days with nuggets, hot dogs, lunch and meat, a chocolate drink, you know, a chocolate-sweetened drink that would come, you know, with extra vitamins and minerals, but it's often given in the mornings. They would have sweetened cereals, which are ultra processed as well, served with vanilla milk or served with condensed milk and water. So you serve sweetened cereal with sweetened milk. They might have a box drink for a snack, and the average box drink has about 8 teaspoons of sugar. The children spend, you know, most of their days at school, and they have a cooked meal, which is usually a decent meal at school, but the school meals menu does have on corned beef and hot dogs. And at the secondary schools, they might have pie and chips, which is a very common request of the student in secondary school. So the canteen operators have said, along with a soft drink or juice. And then when they get home again, it might be cooked food or similar to breakfast, bakes, nuggets, hot dog, you know, lunch and meat, tuna, etc. And when you look at that overall picture of the daily diet of the average child, let's say average primary school age child, it astounds you. It is not, you know, it is high in salt, sugar, and fat. And this has influenced the size of children, because overall it's poor nutrition. Children are being fed. Yes, they're not undernourished, but they're overnourished and malnourished as a result of this type of diet. Now, I want to focus on the sugary drinks. What progress has been made to date with focusing on banning the sale of sugary drinks in schools, or focusing on the reduction of sugary drink intake in children? Where are we?
Well, this has been a long, long trek, very tedious one, and certainly advocacy has been playing a major role. The Heart and Stroke Foundation joined with a number of civil society organizations forming the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition, including Healthy Caribbean Coalition, BarJam, Diabetes Association, Muslim Association, Key Clubs, and various organizations. It's a growing move. We had advocated for the government administration, this was from a few years ago, to put a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. And when we say that, we mean sodas, we mean the juice drinks, we mean anything that has a lot of sugar in it.
And a lot of added sugar.
Added sugar, not natural sugar. It was met with quite a bit of resistance, because whenever you mention something about tax, everybody puts their back up against the wall.
Yes.
However, historically, it's been shown that cigarette smoking and lung cancer decreased when the tax was added to the cigarettes. That was very much of a public health accomplishment and a plus when governments decided they were going to put heavy taxes on cigarettes. Because gender persuasion works for some, but you want to get a lot of people on board to see what is happening. So we had a very small tax which was added a few years ago on sugar-sweetened beverages. And certainly research revealed that there was a decreased purchase of these from the wholesalers. I mean, that was definitely something which came out of it. But we're not convinced that enough taxation has been put on to be a deterrent. But we know that in these harsh economic times, that added tax is just not going to be productive for those who are in administration at this point in time. Serious outcry because of people's budgets and being unemployed and things of that nature. So we have settled on the tax, and it's there. We're trying to use the advocacy move. and educating people about what's happening, and trying to push water in the schools. Now, a number of schools were selected as model schools because they applied to be part of the program early on, about 2 years ago now. There are four secondary schools and two primary schools which signed on to the Heart and Stroke Foundation Childhood Obesity Prevention Program. And we have met with some success there, because we had in these schools, there was a memorandum of understanding which was undertaken, and the principals signed on that they would restrict the sale of sugary drinks in the schools and ban the sale and marketing of carbonated sugary drinks. And it was quite successful. In fact, it's still in place. Coupled with the sensitization of principals and teachers and education of parents, ongoing vendors training by nutrition team, and outreach and educational activities for students in these schools in particular. You have to start small and expand.
So that's an excellent start, yes.
It was, yes. And we hope that it would expand, but of course resources are limited to do the education and manpower as well to go out into the schools. So education material and strategies, I'll give you some examples. How to make healthy drinks was one of the things which was done. It meaning that instead of adding so much sugar, you just know that you should only have a teaspoon of sugar to a glass of whatever you're drinking. Alternately, to put some apple or strawberry into the liquid, shake it up, and it gives a flavor. Because sugar consumption is like an addiction. The more you have, the more you want. If you drink one carbonated sugary drink, you won't have more and more and more. So we're trying to get them to substitute water instead of the sugary drinks.
Right. So let's put the sugary drinks into perspective. Now, the World Health Organization recommends for children daily sugar intake of no more than 6 teaspoons of sugar a day. We're not talking about your pot spoon. We're not talking about your tablespoon. We're talking about your teaspoon. Now, I know that, you know, we encourage people to read labels, but people oftentimes do not understand what the labels mean. So 4 grams of sugar, four grams of sugar is the equivalent of one level teaspoon of sugar. And, you know, our very popular soft drinks are fruit named pretty color soft drinks. You know, those can be up to 17 teaspoons of sugar. Our popular colas are about 13 teaspoons of sugar. And the average Tetra Pak, the average box juice, is about 8 teaspoons of sugar. And people then don't really put this together. So people, when you see 40 grams of sugar in a product, that is equivalent to 10 teaspoons of sugar. So it's very easy. So if the World Health Organization has recommended that children take no more than 6 teaspoons of sugar a day, we've already exceeded that when we pack a box juice or when they buy a box juice, which is approximately 8 teaspoons of sugar a day. So this is part of the reason why we are tackling these sugar sweetened beverages, because it's so easy to get in all of that extra sugar when you drink it down. And children drink 2 to 3 juices a day, 1 to 2 soft drinks a day.
So much is the case there. And certainly it's a change in habit. If the school says they're not having these drinks available, they are not available, you advise the parents, just don't buy them, don't have them in the house. And you find that everybody starts to lose weight because they haven't realized. I think the challenge is that a lot of the families are not aware of what is healthy nutrition versus what you go and buy in the store.
It is lack of knowledge.
Yeah, we're looking at reduction of processed meats like salami, sausages, and corned beef. And you mentioned meals has lunch and meat. High sodium, our kidneys, the black race, the kidneys cannot deal with the high salt like the Caucasian race does. And a lot of people don't know that. So we have a lot of high blood pressure. Then reduction of the high sodium foods, deep frying of the foods and baking or air frying instead. The other thing is utilization of additional proteins like lentils and soy. People say healthy eating is costly, but if you buy what is in season, seasonal, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes cucumbers are $1 a pound or half 50 cents a mm-hmm. pound. Pumpkin, which is low in calories, and incorporating locally grown food types. And I'm so pleased that coming out of COVID, we have so many more vendors available to try to promote what we need for our students.
And we must remember that children learn to eat at home. So yes, if you're telling your child or discouraging your child from drinking the sugar sweetened beverages or have any high salt snacks, any high salt foods, you can't have them lying around or available at home, right? You cannot have them lying around or available at home, because then these things then would be readily accessible to the child. Children learn to eat at home.
Yes, they are pretty good. I find, the children's meals are prepared for the first year. Then they may go to nursery. They're also prepared for them. But then you find parents coming to say, the three-year-old child, she says, I asked him what he wants to eat today for breakfast, and he won't eat. I mean, sometimes we put too much of the burden on the child. How could a three-year-old decide what he wants? Mm-hmm. And you are making the meal, and this is what you put on the table for him. And mm-hmm. if he doesn't want it, it means he just had something to drink or eat before. The other day I had a parent who told me, this was an obese child. The parent told me, I was asking the meal, and I was told, oh, what does he have for breakfast? Oh, he has sweet milk and biscuits. That was his breakfast. There. Now, I mean, sweet milk and that's suicidal. A meal plan.
Zero nutrition.
Zero nutrition. The other thing is, we're putting too much burden on these children, because between the age of 4 and 11 is when they just get out of control with this diet. And if the school meals, which is given to the primary, the public sector, primary schools, the school meals are nutritious and have vegetables. That's another thing. They start to want vegetables and fruit.
Yes.
If they're mm-hmm. balanced, then we would find that the children have the nutrition habits of good nutrition. So when they reach secondary school at the canteen, they would like some vegetables. And the other thing is sometimes they have to pay extra for vegetables. Right. This is what I discovered as well.
A strategy, though, is, the parents have to make sure that they include the fruits and vegetables at home. They introduce the child to these things from early so that they're accustomed eating them. Because if a child is not accustomed eating fruits and vegetables, if they're not exposed to it at home, it's going to be hard for them still, even when they go to school meals, and school meals have vegetables and school meals are offering fruit, they're not going to touch it because they're not accustomed eating it. So we do have to introduce these things to children from early, teach people how to plan a budget, because yes, they say that the healthy things are very costly, but it really does depend on how on what you buy and how you arrange on what your choices are. We're not sending you to buy any expensive products. We want healthy carbohydrates, lean proteins, fruit and veg.
And an additional factor is the portions that are consumed.
Yes.
I know that love is expressed by how much the child is eating. There is a bond there, especially the older generations who feel that they must give more. And certainly two cooked meals a day. This is what we're noticing. They're having two cooked meals a day when they should have a snack for the second meal, certainly. So we're lobbying certainly for awareness about good nutrition and smaller portions, getting down on this sugar sweetened beverages consumption, substitute for water, and looking at a balanced diet. And I would like to give a plug for parents who feel that their children are overweight or obese, and sometimes the concept is a little bit not realistic because they say everybody's like that in the home. But certainly, the Heart and Stroke Foundation has a youth gym where students are referred, and we accept from between ages of 8 and 19 on Saturdays that they come, and the foundation has vacated the gym, and we're under COVID conditions. The students are separated. A good program is in place, nutrition for parents and students, and we're making some impact, although we're making a small impact because it's a small portion in a big pond, we are trying to do our part in educating the general public. We need to be looking at the servings of fruit and vegetables, which should be 5. Water, 4 times a day, servings. Looking at their protein, including dairy, 3 servings a day. Less than 2 hours of screen time and 1 hour a day of moderate physical activity. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's easy for the students and easy for the parents once you start to remember it, to try to follow it along. And reading food labels, we didn't touch on that. We ran out of time. But looking at what the amount of sugar and the amount of fat, which is in the products that people are consuming, just turn it around and see. And it should be under 15, correct me, because I'm not a nutritionist, but grams of fat and sugar is a good way to go.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. St. John, on that discussion on childhood obesity. We'll be inviting you back to explore this topic further. And thank you, the listeners. That was Dr. Anne St. John, consultant pediatrician and medical director of youth health at the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Barbados, on the topic of childhood obesity.
If you would like more information or have any questions on any of the topics discussed on the show, please contact us at arnottcatofoundation@gmail.com or call or message 269-6183. I am Marianne Burnham, nutritionist and board member of the Arnott Cato Foundation.